If you're wondering how to navigate government or grow your business or even secure funding for your nonprofit, then this is the podcast for you. Here on Lobbying Insider, we take a look at the intersection between business and government and show how things actually get done. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Welcome to the program. And we are joined by two special guests, our own Keith Wright from DHC. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning.
And Bianca Rajprasad.
Good morning.
We are going to discuss the mayor's race. Lots to say, lots of twists and turns. I want to start with full disclosure. You, in your capacity, Keith, as county leader, have endorsed Mamdani, Zoran Mamdani?
I have, yes.
And how about you, Bianca? I know in your capacity in Staten Island, you're also political out there. Have you actually endorsed one or any of the candidates?
I think, you know, I just stand with the party, the Staten Island Democratic Party, made a stance to support Mamdani, so.
Gotcha. Okay, just want to get that out of the way. Wow, what a mayor's race, huh? I mean, just so different than what we thought it would be. I mean, you go back to March when Andrew Cuomo, the former governor, announced that he was getting into the race. Instant front runner. Polls were showing that up until pretty late in the game. Mamdani comes out, wins the primary by 13 percentage points. And yet, the candidates, it becomes a totally new race. Cuomo stays in the race. And now we're in a situation where you have a four-way race for mayor. So, Keith, just start us off. I mean, did you anticipate seeing this, especially after Mamdani won the primary?
Oh, God, no. I had no idea. As you said, back in March, when Andrew Cuomo decided he was going to get into the race, everybody thought that he was a clear front runner, and he was going to be coronated as the next Democratic nominee. And Mamdani, nobody even really heard of him. Right. Mamdani came out of nowhere, but it just shows that he was doing the work. He was registering voters. He was showing up to events and to talk to people. He was talking to people on the subway. But we had no idea. I didn't have any idea. I mean, the clearest indication that I had was on election day, when I went to go vote, and I saw a whole bunch of people that I had never seen vote before, younger folks.
And you're obviously familiar with your precincts.
Oh,
and,
Lord,
right,
yes.
And who comes out, yes, right, for most,
yes,
elections.
We know them by name.
Right.
As a district leader,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you actually are supposed to know your voters by name. And, you know, if I don't know their faces, I know their names.
Sure.
And these are folks I had no idea. And I had to wait, at least 45 minutes to an hour to vote, which is unheard of
during
in Harlem during a primary. Yeah. And that's when I knew that these folks were coming out from Mamdani. And the other indicator was that I would see people, volunteers for Mamdani. I saw no volunteers for Andrew. But as you said, this has become a whole new race. Usually, the winner of the Democratic primary will coast and go to November unencumbered. This is not the case right now. When you have Cuomo and when you have Adams and throw in a little side of Sliwa, and you know you have a political stew that is going to be tasty come November. I'll tell you that right now. So.
Right. I mean, we haven't seen, Bianca, a competitive election in November in a long time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, just to see how the boroughs turned out, I think in what we considered moderate, you know, areas, how they went Mamdani, that was a game changer. I know on Staten Island, Andrew Cuomo won Staten Island easily, but...
But Mamdani won Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn, the big three.
Right, exactly. And I feel like even in the pockets in the outer boroughs where we thought were moderate or, you know, semi-conservative, the fact that Mamdani was able to, I guess, generate a voting base there and also get, as Keith mentioned, a number of new voters registered and, you know, eligible to vote in the primary, that was game changer. This was really unprecedented.
You know, I spoke to a political insider who made a funny point, but they were kind of like... All these new voters came out for Mamdani. Do they know that they have to vote again in November? You know,
they may not. They may not.
Right?
They may not.
Be able to marshal the same coalition to actually come out twice in a year.
But right? I bet you, if Mamdani has something to do with it, he'll make sure that they do, in fact, know.
Right. A big part of this is, in fact, the street, right? It's getting, it's the volunteers, it's getting people, it's reminding them they have to vote, because if they're first-time voters, right, they're not familiar with the process. It's creating a new map. Mm-hmm.
And mind you, these folks are not DSA. They're just younger folks.
Right.
That I think are just voting for change.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, they've heard.
Even if DSA is doing some of the organizing.
That's right. Right. That's right. And these are folks that they've heard the name Cuomo over the years. They've heard the name Adams over the years. And I'm sure they've heard the name Sliwa over the years. But they're voting for change. And they may not. And Mondami connected with these folks with his videos and with the social media and such, connected in ways that the other candidates simply did not and have not.
I think it would be interesting to see how many of his voters in June were college students, right? Because now there's a lot of obviously college students went away now. So again, that goes back to what's going to be the turnout in November in terms of his base. But obviously his team has those numbers, but that would be interesting to know.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, Zach, I mean to cut you off, but the differences in the boroughs. Bianca, she's very involved in Staten Island. And it's almost a badge of honor, well, badge of courage, political courage, that she is now out there for Mondami, because he went out there and I guess to campaign and they booed him off the borough.
Yeah.
So, you know, it takes a lot of political courage. But, you know, and whereas in Manhattan, Mondami swept Manhattan.
Yeah.
He swept Harlem. He swept East Harlem, swept Washington Heights.
Areas that were considered more moderate, right?
And more Cuomo
More Cuomo-friendly, right?
Yeah,
right.
More Cuomo-friendly. Yeah. So, needless to say, a week after the election, we endorsed him. So,
but you made a good point, which is that there might have been a lot of young people voting for change, that it was a change, quote-unquote,
I believe it was a
election,
change.
Right? Where it's a kind of change of course. And I think that's a really interesting observation because— You know, now you see a situation where Trump is in the White House, Democrats don't really have a path forward, and now you have someone young, charming, full of different ideas. Not sure that everybody agrees with all those ideas within the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party is also diverse. But it's new. It's different. It just seems to present a new way of approaching, fighting, you know, the forces of Trump and MAGA and everything else. And so I asked both of you, I mean, is it a little unusual that there's been, we're taping on September 10th, a lack of institutional support to come and endorse him? And is that a problem for the Democratic Party? What kind of a message is that sending?
God, I'll let her answer that first.
As a moderate.
We'll go around the room here.
As a moderate Democrat, I think my biggest thing is, you can't shun a population of the party because, again, as a Democratic Party, we're already losing people. We're losing elections, and it's because of messaging. And if your messaging is just because you think differently, you can't sit with us, basically, that's a huge turnoff. And now what if these registered young Democrats go independent? That's a voting block that we're losing as a Democratic Party. So I do think that we do have to come together and coalesce behind a candidate. And, you know, obviously there are some things that Mondani's campaign is putting out there that I don't think are realistic. But the facts are the facts that he won the Democratic primary. Obviously, the constituency within the Democratic Party are speaking loudly that they want change. And they view Mondani as this exciting candidate that they feel like is going to bring change. And I think we have to take... As a party, we have to take cues from what we're seeing on the ground. Again, it's different on Staten Island because Staten Island is such a moderate voting base. So, like I said, it went Cuomo, but I think
she says moderate. I say conservative.
I say moderate. I don't consider myself a conservative. But obviously, what we're seeing across the city, it just speaks volumes of what people want from our party.
I think Bianca is right. First of all, Mondami had a message.
Right.
He had a message. And the message happened to, it resonated with the voting population. I don't know what Cuomo's message was. It's just that he just was not Mondami.
It's tough to win on that.
And yes, I'm not Mondami.
Right.
And
Democrats learned that with Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the message. There was no, message of change.
Right.
It was kind of like, you know, this guy's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. And regardless whether or not he's able to achieve what he set out to do, but at least he's talking about it.
Yeah.
And there was a message.
Yeah.
The Cuomo message, I think he was saying that he was not Mondami, and this guy is young. And that was the message. So right. you have to have an affirmative, a positive message in order, I do believe, and I think Bianca's correct that you just can't shun a section of the it's a party with a big tent.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it is, you know, politics is a young person's game to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I know people point to lack of experience, and I'm not dismissing that criticism. It's a fair criticism, but you also need young, energetic people who are going to work 24 hours a day.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And that tends to be a younger set. I mean, there was an article, I think, in the Post talking about how his brain trust, they're all under 36. 36 ain't all that young. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, these are people who you know, in the prime of their careers.
That's exactly who you want.
No, that's right. But you mentioned messaging. I mean, interestingly enough, it was not a dissimilar message to Trump, at least on affordability. I mean, Trump was able to appeal to the country and say, you know, the big issue here is money and affordability and being able to live here in a very expensive society. That seemed to be what resonated with Mamdani.
No question about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, when I tell you, when I was at my polling site and I tell you that the average age of the voter was, I would say, about 30 years old. Now, these 30-year-olds, they're trying, especially coming out of COVID and such, they're trying to find their way, whether it's a job, whether they can live in their own apartments, and Lord knows if they have children, mm-hmm. what to do with the children. This city is expensive, and it's always been expensive, and it's getting even more so.
It's getting worse, isn't it?
It's getting worse.
It feels that way to me.
It's getting worse. It's right? getting worse.
Feels that way to my pockets. What do you mean?
Yeah.
No, it's getting, you know, I saw some study where it says if you're a single person, you have to make $140,000 a year in order.
As a single person.
As a single person, which to me is still a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
And, and
they're not giving those jobs out like M&Ms.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So, and this is what these young people hear. I mean, they want their own apartments rather than, having five roommates with a two-bedroom apartment or whatever the hell it is and sharing your orange juice in the refrigerator. It's just, people start graduating from those scenes.
Right.
Yeah, and, like, think about all the immigrant families that come to this country, come to New York City specifically for a better life and for job opportunities, and you come here and you realize that the minimum wage that you're making at a local bodega shop cannot, you know, afford you the life that you want to live in terms of, like, the apartment size that you need, right, in New York City, because it's not affordable. And Trump's election, we saw in New York City how a lot of what we thought were Dem pockets actually went to Trump, right, especially the Hispanic vote. And then what we saw in Mamdani's campaign via his TikTok videos and social media platform is those same voters are saying the reason why I voted for Trump is because I just felt like I wasn't being heard within the Democratic Party and the issues that I cared about weren't being highlighted or even addressed. And Trump was literally amplifying his message behind that. And Zohran took that and ran with it and, you know, like you said, spoke about affordability and really spoke to those voters who, you know, either came here from a different country looking for a better opportunity or are college students from maybe other states or now realizing moving out of their parents' house that, you know, groceries, you know, living on your own, it's not affordable in New York City.
And I would argue it even cuts across a broader swath of the population. I mean, I can just tell you anecdotally, I have noticed in the last few years just going out to dinner with my family. Yeah. I mean, I know people are going to be like, rich people problems. I don't care. But my point is that if I'm feeling it, just taking my dinner out to family,
right,
in the city on a Friday night, the difference between even a couple of years ago with the bill is you can imagine someone who's living, you know, paycheck to paycheck and is worried about the rent suddenly going up.
And people are doing just that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I understand the concern and the panic, and you're looking for new ideas.
And it may not be achievable, but at least he's talking about it. You know, it's interesting. They had this New York Times poll. Came out, what, 2 or 3 days ago, and I think was followed up today with some sort of Emerson College poll, and both of them very similar, very similar.
Yeah.
So whatever he's doing, it's working.
Right.
It's working.
Cuomo's having trouble getting above 25%, it seems like. Which brings us to you know, that he may have hit his ceiling, you know, because people have strong opinions of him one way or the other. But, you know, there's been all these machinations these last several weeks about, you know, trying to make it a two-person race between Cuomo and Mamdani, and it's been, to me, I mean, just craziness. I mean, you know, Adam's talking about taking a job and being sent to Saudi Arabia and working for Trump, and then there's the private sector.
Which is highly illegal, I think.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, if you're offering somebody something.
It's a quid pro quo. Trump justice has seemed to not care about that. But yeah, it's a good point also, yeah. It certainly make a case.
Let's put that aside.
Yeah, right, right. But I mean, like, what do we make of that? I mean, does it seem like your offer's on the table? Do you think the mayor's seriously entertaining these? I mean, we'll get to the polls in a minute, but just because polls show the mayor down, he's still the sitting mayor.
Yeah.
He still has a shot here, right? And I don't know that I would give up my campaign necessarily if I'm the sitting mayor based on a poll in September. I don't know that I would.
No, and I don't think anybody that's ever been in elective office would do that just because the poll says, well, look at Mamdani. I mean, he was like at, 8% in March? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
he started like 2%.
2%, whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, listen, the world has been moving very quickly when you have supposedly the president offering these carrots to the sitting mayor. Now, and I happen to think you're right. Listen, I think Adams has a lane that he could, if he achieves it, that he could win. He could win.
Right.
I think probably you have a lot of people after the indictments and such that say, oh, no, I'm never going to go with him. But people vote the names that they know.
Right. Yeah. And you never know.
And let's not exclude the importance of the black vote.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here in New York. I mean, Cuomo's always in a black church every Sunday. Sliwa, I don't know. I guess he thinks riding in the subways is good enough for him. But anyways.
But he's got a built-in Republican
base.
Based on precedent. But,
that's right.
You know, the last several cycles. But yeah. it's not unheard of that Sliwa could walk away with 30% of the vote.
That's true. And the black vote, I mean, let's say if it's even divided, it sounds like some of your older black voters are going Cuomo because they know the name. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's say the younger black voters go Mamdani, but then Cuomo and Adams will be dividing that older black vote. So.
It does seem like it's very difficult for either one of them to win if they both stay in the race.
That's right. Oh, no question. But I do believe, and I've talked to you a little bit about this, Zach. I mean, if it's just one-on-one, I still think Mamdani wins.
It seems that way.
The front page of I think the Daily News today says rich people going to bail Cuomo out or something like that. That's not the headline you want if you're running for office.
Well, and it didn't work the last time. I mean, right? You go back to the primary, all this money was spent, upwards of $25 million,
whatever it was,
right? You know, blanketing the airwaves. And I thought on some level, actually, those TV ads boosted Mamdani's name recognition,
question.
Right? Yeah. Because they went negative. The Cuomo campaign, you know, I guess it wasn't coordinating directly with Cuomo because it was a PAC, but was going after Mamdani personally. You know, here's a guy who's a somewhat obscure assemblyman.
They said his name and they showed his picture.
And all of a sudden, as people start saying, well, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, why should I be so afraid of him? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you start to investigate and pay attention. But it was funny because in the primary, you had a situation where it was like no one was paying attention. Then all of a sudden, everyone was paying attention.
And who is this guy?
Yeah, and Mamdani became the clear choice. Right. I mean, you know, and you'd seen that the last couple cycles. Remember, Christine Quinn was going to be the mayor in 2013. She wound up being Bill de Blasio. You know, the conventional wisdom was Andrew Yang in 2021 and wound up being Eric Adams. So very often the front runner, at least in the last several cycles, has not been the person who prevailed.
But I think, I guess Mamdani being the front runner now, what did Satchel Paige say? don't look behind you. Someone may be gaining on you. So,
it's good life advice.
And I think Madami's probably adhering to that adage.
Well, and does he know how to run as a front runner? It's a different thing.
It's a whole different thing.
And it's now yours to lose. Yeah. That's so right. there's a different kind of pressure, I think, on him.
That's right.
You know, to maintain that lead. Yeah. We talked a little bit about his policies. I mean, there does seem to be kind of a collective freak out within the Democratic Party. Oh my God, he's going to do this. He's going to do this. It's, you know, he's talking about free buses. That's the MTA's call. It's not his call as mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talking about raising taxes on the rich. Not his call. You got to go through Albany, right? I mean, a lot of people don't totally realize that, you know, who are not initiated in politics, but like you can't, as mayor, you're almost, you know, a non-player in effectuating policy that way.
You're a subsidiary of the state of
the
New
state,
York,
exactly.
Of the state of New York.
Right. It's a creature of the state.
That's right. You know? That's right. That's
and
right.
And it is a managerial job, right? It's police, it's picking up garbage, it's making sure all that stuff runs on time. And there, of course, ideology matters, but you're limited in what you can do yourself.
But so much you can do by executive fiat. Just so much you can do, but that's the nature of politics. I mean, you have to work with other entities and what have you. So, what the governor does, I mean, certainly, I know she's been hesitant about endorsing the mayor, endorsing Mandami, but you know she's got to run next year.
Right, she's up right away.
And plus, I mean, there's this whole PR campaign about making Mandami the boogeyman.
Yeah,
which I think is what Trump wants.
Yeah,
but I don't know why he would, want to go one-on-one because I think this helps Trump in so many ways. But you know, who knows.
I would say because of his policies, and like we know this as being like inside baseball people that this goes through the state, but I think the establishment, quote unquote, is concerned about this in terms of messaging because he gets elected, he's in office, and he can't get XYZ accomplished. That is a reflection on the Democratic Party. So in 4 years, too, that means that the mayoral seat is up in the air for a possible Republican to come in and say, listen, you voted this candidate in who promised you free housing, you know, rent freezes, free busing, and on the whole nine, and they weren't able to deliver, and that's why you need to go Republican or independent. So I think that's also the concern within the established party, too.
But is there an understanding you think that, you know, that the mayor can do more than he actually can do? Because I do think the governor does set policy, right?
Yes.
The governor lays out a state of the state, works with the legislature. It does dramatically impact the 20 million people in this state. You know, a handful of items every year. It's not a ton, but it's a few. And they. You know, there's all this debate about the criminal justice reforms. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever side of you're on that, there's no question there was an impact when reforms were made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so then, you know, you wonder, does the mayor have that same ability to effectuate policy? I don't think they do.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
And in terms of polls, what do you think happened? Why were they so off? And should we trust the ones now? I mean, to me, it says no.
You know, I have trust issues.
Yeah,
coming out of the primary, I have trust issues with polls now. Like, I don't even look at them anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first polls back in March were those were Cuomo polls. He paid for them. He paid for them. Yes, they were done by reputable people, but he still paid for them.
Yeah.
The Bradley Tusk poll, and I think there was a guy named Bradley Honan that did a poll, but those were
they have denied poll. Directly paying for them, but we should say that there were ties there. They were working with Tusk strategies.
Well, Tusk worked for Cuomo.
Right.
I mean, he was there. So, polls, I mean, the New York Times just came out with a poll. If we can't trust the New York Times, who can we trust?
Right.
I mean, in this world, who knows?
I don't know.
I know.
Questionable.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I heard the Staten Island Advance was going to create a poll.
Times has had some problems in the last year, right? You could say they were a little off about the 2024 election, for example, the national election.
Right, that's right, that's right. So, I mean, the polls, and I'm with Bianca, I mean, polls... if you're an elected official, if you're running for office, you can be guided by him, but you shouldn't listen to him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you believe in yourself and believe in your messaging, you should just keep pushing. Mm-hmm.
So how does this all shake out? I mean, do we see something dramatic happen, some sort of October surprise?
Oh, there's more coming.
You Absolutely. Think so, right? Oh, I mean, there's already been coming. So many twists mm-hmm. and turns. So at this point, would it be hard to say definitively that, you know, it's settled or I mean, because a lot of times people say by Labor Day, you know, the polls are pretty much where they're going to be. But I think this is a different sort of race.
There's right? more coming. Yeah. I just don't know what it is.
That's
but
the
there's
thing.
More I'm not ready. Coming.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't like it.
I don't like and it.
It's going to be a quiet. September surprise. Yeah. It's going to be an October surprise. Right. And I bet you dollars to doing this. Yeah. It will be a November surprise.
A November 3rd surprise.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh,
that's
my
right.
God.
No, it's and especially with the president acting the way he's acting.
Yeah.
He seems to be very invested in what happens here in New York. And Trump has a lot of motivations. I mean, he's upset with New York because of the way they've treated him. And he just may want to come back and put his stamp on it.
Right. Which I would imagine hurts whoever he puts his, if he gets involved and puts his thumb on the scale for whoever he puts this thumb on the scale for, I would imagine that backfires.
He may not know that. He may think.
Oh, I don't think he cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's
I was going to say that part.
Yeah, and I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely
Two different
correct.
Questions, right?
Yeah. I think you're absolutely correct. So, there's more to come. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
We'll have
tuned.
A better idea getting closer to early voting. Once early voting starts, which is, October 25th, we'll have a better understanding of, what pockets are turning out, which boroughs are turning out in large amounts. I think even in this primary, early voting numbers, we're really kind of give the indicator, okay, Mamdani has the lead. Because in certain pockets, you were seeing an increase in early voting voters that we haven't seen in the past. So I think by, October 26th, 27th, when we start getting more numbers in from early voting and seeing, again, which EDs are turning out, that's going to be a good indicator of, okay, he has it or someone else has it in the bag.
Isn't it interesting how much Trump seems to care about this election also? I mean, just if you even go back to dropping the charges against Adams, and many believe that was motivated because he wanted to see his guy at that time, then it sort of switched to maybe be Cuomo that Trump wanted, mm-hmm. or at least, that was the speculation because he was getting so involved. It just seems like that's an unusual amount of attention for a president to pay to a local election. Granted, it's New York City. It's the biggest city in the country.
Mm-hmm. His hometown, yeah.
Yeah, it's his hometown. It mm-hmm. matters. But it does seem like there's been an awful lot of the shadow of Trump in this race.
I notice he's not helping the Republican in the race.
Right.
That part.
Right. And uh-huh. He doesn't seem to be helping.
The two of them apparently have a cold peace.
Oh, is that right?
Well, but they're not. They're certainly not simpatico, right? I mean, they're Sliwa and Trump apparently are not close.
They're not close. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because the New York Republicans are getting behind Sliwa. Mm-hmm. They are saying he should stay in the race and he's got a shot. Yep. And
that is true.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, Curtis resonates with a certain population, and just, he's on the streets and such, but to go out there and actually vote for him is another story as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and he ran in the last.
He ran in the last time, that's right,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
then the last one.
Right.
the last one before that, and the last one. So
he's
on
a
and
very
so.
New York City
No
character.
Question. He's a character.
Right. He's a character.
He's a character.
He's a character.
Yeah. He's a character.
I like that. Right. He's a character.
Right. Yeah. And some people think he's hilarious. Others are bothered by him. But whatever.
Very smart guy. Very smart
guy.
Smart, smart
and
guy.
Makes himself relevant. Mm-hmm. Trump-like in some ways, can sometimes bring the conversation back to him. Not quite with the talent that Trump has to do that, but, similar. Carnival Barker.
Yeah,
Carnival.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Circus is coming to town.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you both for coming on, and we'll talk again soon.
But there's so much more to say.
There is. I know. Let's revisit.
Two.
We'll do it in a couple weeks.
Part
yeah.
two.
And we'll
part,
come back.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with it.
The Lobbying Insider Podcast is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York State's premier middle market law firm, practicing in more than 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and government affairs. The podcast is produced by Don Tesserero, and our platform manager is Monica Thomas. Be sure to subscribe, and you can get it where you get most podcasts, including Apple, Audible, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thanks for being with us.